Good morning. Thank you for coming this morning. Each one of you individually is a large percentage of everyone here. I'm very happy to see you and appreciate that. It's a pleasure. Oops, I gotta keep up with this. It's a pleasure to tell you a little bit this morning about a program for pregnant women in Colorado. The title of my presentation is very cumbersome, but it outlines the story. The impact of the Healthy Baby Campaign pilot program in 2004. How's that? Can you hear me better? On inadequate maternal weight gain during pregnancy in 2005. The two project managers, Linda Archer and Stephanie Baudet, were instrumental in developing and running the program, and I'm very sorry they can't be here with us this morning. The next slide is my presenter disclosure, and I have no relationships to disclose. Why did we do this study? A little background is helpful. Colorado has had a relatively high low birth weight rate compared to the nation and compared to the Healthy People 2010 goal. While altitude is often cited or even blamed for Colorado's high rate, a population attributable risk analysis that the State Health Department did in 2000 revealed that one out of every eight low birth weight births among singletons could be attributed to the fact that the mother did not gain an adequate amount of weight during pregnancy. This was the highest PAR found in the analysis, higher even than the one for smoking. The association between low maternal weight gain and low birth weight, as you know, is well documented in the research literature. We learned that 19% of all pregnant women, just about one out of every five, did not gain adequately. This determination was based on the 1990 Institute of Medicine guidelines, which I'll show in a moment. By the way, this is a problem not just unique to Colorado. This is a problem across the country. We also discovered that half of all singleton low birth weight births could be attributed to the fact that the mother did not gain enough weight, or that she smoked, or that she experienced a rapid repeat pregnancy, or that her prenatal care was delayed past the first trimester, all risks that are modifiable. So here are the guidelines. This chart shows how much weight a pregnant woman should gain according to her body mass index. If she's underweight with a BMI less than 19.8, that's in the red, and I'm sorry if it doesn't show up very well, she should gain 28 to 40 pounds. If she's normal weight, the green, she should gain 25 to 35. Overweight, the yellow, she should gain 15 to 25. And obese, shown in orange, at least 15 pounds. These guidelines were issued in 1990. New ones, which differ slightly, were released last year. But our work's based on the earlier guidelines. Weight gains below the recommended amounts are considered inadequate. I should also point out that we adjusted for gestational age so that a woman who was on track to gain the recommended amount by 40 weeks, who delivered, for example, at 35 weeks, would fall into the having gained adequately. Our calculations were based on the WIC program weight gain grids. You may notice well that the BMI values used today to determine weight gain categories differ slightly from those recommended 20 years ago. The results from our population attributable risk analysis were called to action since so many of the identified risks for low birth weight were modifiable. They suggested that we could do something about low birth weight in Colorado. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment therefore developed a campaign which a professional PR firm helped us title "A Healthy Baby is Worth the Wait." We focused on two groups, providers and consumers. The message for the providers was, use the IOM guidelines to counsel women about weight gain. These guidelines were remarkably, many places were unaware of the guidelines. Let's put it that way. The providers were unaware and they were used to using the normal weight, just the guidelines for normal weight, 25 to 35 pounds, regardless of BMI. The message to consumers was, there is a relationship between how much weight you gain and how much your baby gains, and gaining enough weight can reduce your risk of having a baby that is too small. So the state health department trained local health providers, local health agencies to train providers in 9 large counties in 2004. These counties were in metropolitan Denver and in western and northern Colorado. And these counties included more than 3/4 of all the births in the state. Each agency received $12,000. It really doesn't sound like that much, but they each received $12,000 to carry out a local media campaign. Each agency learned and promoted the guidelines, and each taught strategies to providers on how to implement the guidelines. As to consumer interventions, the media component educated the consumers about the link between maternal weight gain and fetal weight gain. There were TV and public service announcements, radio as well, billboards, bus stop boards, and so on. All materials were in English and Spanish. There was a toll-free telephone support system, and a website was developed that recorded 40,000 hits per month at its peak. Here is an example of a poster, and I've got one in my hand here as well. It says, "Their health outweighs your figure." This one and shows a nicely round pregnant woman. This addressed the issue for some patients about not wanting to gain too much weight just because they didn't want to look too round. What I like about this example is it shows how professional these materials were that we had, because they really, really were very helpful in promoting the program. As to providers, they also received wall charts that showed just how much weight to gain according to a patient's height and weight. A patient could look at the chart, determine her BMI category, and see how much weight she should gain. The chart could help open the conversation between patient and provider about weight gain, which is definitely a very sensitive topic. Each provider also received a BMI calculator. I think you probably all got them out there in the audience. And we've got a lot of these, and we're really trying to give them away because they're the 1990 recommendations. But you might want to take this back just as an example of this cool idea, where on the back of the figure out when the baby's due, you just flip it over and figure out how much a woman should gain. You put her height and her weight and you get her BMI. This wheel was very, very popular and enabled providers to bring up the subject by just flipping over the wheel after they said when the baby was coming. Providers were also given individual patient weight gain grids so that weight could be plotted at each visit and a woman could see how well she was doing compared to the recommended amount for her weight gain category, and obviously her clinician as well. All these materials were in response to focus group findings among physicians who had few or no nutrition materials, or knew of no referral sources. They could not calculate BMI because they did not record height. This was very, very typical, often because they had no stadiometers to measure height. They did not have any way to measure weight gain over time, and they could not keep track of who got counseling about weight gain. As the pilot was being developed, it became clear that there was a good deal of resistance. It was hard to sell the idea that inadequate weight gain was a problem. Physicians were unlikely to see that there were any women at all in their practices who didn't gain enough weight. In fact, they were much more concerned about excessive weight gain. These patients were very easy to see, and there were a lot of them. In addition, local county health agencies were not necessarily comfortable contacting providers or practices in their area. These relationships did not always exist, and it was often hard to get in the door. Despite the problems, the pilot program trained over 800 individual providers. The program worked with a number of large health and insurance systems serving thousands of women, including Kaiser, which is big here in Colorado, Denver Health, and Rocky Mountain HMO, among others. As the program was being developed, we were thinking as well about how to measure the impact on a population level. And we turned to the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System, PRAMS, for the data. This survey uses an ongoing sample of mothers taken from birth certificates. We've done this since 1997 in Colorado. Mothers love to talk about their pregnancies and their babies, and the response rate is higher than 70%. The data are weighted to reflect all mothers in the state. PRAMS data includes just the data that we needed. The height and pre-pregnancy weight of the mother are used to calculate the pre-pregnancy body mass index. Hi, Kelly. And the weight gain of the mother during pregnancy combined with her BMI category tells us if her weight gain is adequate. Okay, so finally we get some results. In your abstract, the numbers are a little bit different, but that's just because we refined how we calculated an adequate weight gain. So go by what I'm showing you here today. So the graph shows the percent of births with an adequate weight gain beginning with the year 1997. We see that just under 1 out of every 5 women fails to gain an adequate amount of weight throughout this entire time period. For counties that ended up in the pilot program, shown in red, the percentage was about 18%. And for counties that didn't get the pilot, shown in green, it was another point or two higher. There was no significant difference between the two sets of counties, and each had 18.3% of women gaining inadequately in 2004. Now, the pilot program ran from February to September 2004. This was the period of time that agencies received their training and that providers were being contacted with materials. Women who began their care during this period, after the pilot was underway, would not actually deliver in 2004. So we would not expect to see any impact in that year. The next slide shows what happened the next year. In 2005, we see that there was a decline in the percent of births with inadequate weight gain in the counties with the pilot. You can see that the red line drops from 18.3% in 2004 to 12.8% in 2005, while the counties without the pilot had 19.3% of their births in the inadequate category. The drop in the pilot counties was statistically significant, with less than 0.01, and the difference between the pilot and non-pilot counties is significant as well. From nearly 1 in 5 women gaining inadequately, the proportion dropped to 1 in 8. In addition, the singleton low-term low birth weight rate dropped in the pilot counties, although I want to hasten to add that many factors influenced this rate. The decline in inadequate weight gain was quite an incredible result because it was so large. While the drop was 30% for the pilot counties, it worked out to be 22% statewide, since the pilot counties form such a large proportion of all the births. And so this was a statistically significant drop as well statewide. But let's look at the following year. For 2006, we discovered that the percent of births with inadequate weight gain returned to its former levels in the counties with the pilot program. The red line climbed back up to 20% and then 21% in 2006 and 2007. The increase from 2005 to 2006 was statistically significant again, and there were no significant differences between the two sets of counties in the following years after 2005. Well, this is pretty disappointing, but it was not surprising. The pilot program had not been continued much after 2004. There was no more direct funding for the media campaign. Consumer demand for information about weight gain fell. While the website remained, the hits dropped dramatically. The providers still had the materials and made some practice changes, but the campaign really lost steam. The agencies themselves lost motivation. "We did that last year," they said. So a little discussion. We saw the improvement evaporate with a significant increase in inadequate weight gain in the pilot counties after the funding ended. Furthermore, the program was actually unaware of the year of success until long after the pilot ended. The PRANS data on the percent of women with inadequate weight gain for 2005 was not available until 2007. Because there's a lag in processing surveys. Not knowing if the pilot had had any impact was problematic for state program staff and affected their motivation as well. So in conclusion, overall, we do want to stress that the pilot program was successful. No other systematic effort was undertaken at the same time, to our knowledge. Indeed, the large multi-county training effort aimed at providers had value, and the social marketing messages aimed at consumers were effective, but the results were short-lived. This is my last slide. It shows what else we learned. First, consumer education must be ongoing because close to half of all pregnant women are having their first baby each year. The statistic for Colorado is actually 44%. So 44% of all births are first births. This means that a new cohort of women needs education every year. Targeting the consumer is clearly as important as targeting the provider. Second, we do know that behavior change can occur on a large scale among pregnant women when both providers and consumers are targeted. Finally, a pilot program intervention is only the first step. We saw the proportion of pregnant women with inadequate weight gain fall significantly once in Colorado. And we're going to work to make sure it happens again. Reducing Colorado's high low birth weight rate is our ultimate goal. And we will continue to focus on effective ways to make it happen. All we need is a little more money and a little more will to revisit the issue. Thank you very much for your attention. And hopefully there's time. We have 1 minute for questions. Oh, OK. Back here. Would you repeat the question? Yes, so the question is, what about, you know, just going for appropriate weight gain? This is actually what the program did after 2005. They switched to doing, they got tobacco money, so then they focused on quitting smoking. And then they switched to, and then when the tobacco money kind of dried up, they switched to appropriate weight gain. And that is what they are doing now, because the program still exists. It just doesn't have this really consumer component, but it's all about appropriate weight gain. So it's shocking how, generally speaking, a provider doesn't calculate BMI for a woman, but she really needs to do that. I have to stop. Can I take one more question?
At the end.
At the end. Okay, please remember your questions. Thank you very much.